Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now, I will turn the meeting over to Ms. Alicia Downs. Ms. Downs, you may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for today's COCA conference call on disaster surveillance. We are very pleased to have Ms. Amy Funk-Wolkin and Lieutenant Commander Rebecca S. Noe present. We will be using a PowerPoint presentation for this call that you should be able to access on our website. If you have not already downloaded the presentation, please go to www.emergency.cdc.gov/COCA. Click on the conference call information, summaries, and slide sets, and the PowerPoint can be found there. Our speakers are both epidemiologists here at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Rebecca Noe works in the National Center for Preparedness, Detection, and Control of Infectious Disease in the Division of Bioterrorism Preparedness and Response. She's also a family nurse practitioner. Ms. Wolkin works in the National Center for Environmental Health in the Division of Environmental Hazards and Health Effects in the Health Studies Branch. She has been responding to disasters for the past 5 years as an environmental epidemiologist. Both speakers serve as project officers for the Disaster Surveillance Workgroup here at CDC. The goal of this workgroup is to coordinate and develop standardized surveillance tools. The objectives for today's call are, after this activity, the participants will be able to review potential public health impacts of a natural disaster and describe disaster surveillance, that participants will be able to discuss challenges in disaster surveillance and describe data sources and critical data elements needed in disaster surveillance, and will be able to describe the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's agency role in a natural disaster and their methods for coordinating federal, state, and local disaster activities. In compliance with continuing education requirements, all presenters must disclose any financial or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, suppliers of commercial services, or commercial supporters, as well as any use of unlabeled products or products under investigational use. CDC, our planners, and the presenters for this seminar do not have any financial or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, suppliers of commercial services, or commercial supporters. This presentation does not involve the unlabeled use of a product or product under investigational use. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Amy Wolkin. You may begin.
Good afternoon. Next slide. My name is Amy Wolkin. Today, Rebecca Noe and I will be speaking about disaster surveillance. Next slide. I will first review disasters and the importance of conducting surveillance during and after a disaster. Then, as an example, I'll briefly describe the public health response during Hurricane Katrina, what federal and national assets were deployed, and describe the morbidity surveillance systems that were implemented in the healthcare facilities and in evacuation centers. Lastly, Rebecca will discuss CDC's Disaster Surveillance Workgroup, its inception, our work to date, and future activities. Next slide. After this call, you should be able to review potential public health impacts of a natural disaster and describe disaster surveillance, discuss challenges in disaster surveillance and describe data sources and critical data elements needed in disaster surveillance, and describe the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's agency's role in a natural disaster and their methods for coordinating federal, state, and local disaster activities. Next slide. The following is the definition of disaster according to the United Nations Department of Humanitarian Affairs, the World Health Organization, and the text definition of disaster according to GUNN's Multilingual Dictionary of Disaster Medicine and International Relief. A disaster is a serious disruption of the functioning of society, causing widespread human, material, or environmental losses that exceeds the local capacity to respond and calls for external assistance. There are two basic components in this definition. The first is disruption, and the second is that the disruption exceeds the local capacity to respond. Next slide. This is a quote from Eric Nugent, the editor of a book entitled The Public Health Consequences of Disasters. Disasters are defined by what they do to people. Otherwise, they are simply interesting geological or meteorological phenomena. Natural disasters are unforeseen and often cause major loss of human lives and livelihoods. Though disasters are far from preventable, the potential exists to reduce their effects on the health of the population. Next slide. Disasters are a public health problem because they cause unexpected number of deaths, injuries, and illnesses that exceed available health resources. Disasters may destroy local health infrastructure and emergency response capabilities, including the interruption of communication and power outages. They may cause adverse effects to the environment, leading to increased risk of disease for humans. And disasters may cause large populations to move to new areas that may lead to increased morbidity and mortality. For example, inadequate sanitation and displaced person shelters, food or water shortages, and psychosocial issues. Next slide. Disaster epidemiology is the use of epidemiology to assess the short and long-term adverse health effects of disasters and to predict consequences of future disasters. Surveillance is a disaster epidemiology tool that is used to assess health effects, monitor the effectiveness of relief efforts, respond to public concerns and media inquiries, and facilitate planning for future disasters. Next slide. The public health definition of surveillance is the ongoing systematic collection, analysis, interpretation, and dissemination of data about a health-related event for use in public health action to reduce morbidity and mortality and to improve health. Next slide. Active surveillance during a disaster is important for several reasons. Active or sentinel surveillance activities complement regular reporting mechanisms that might be disrupted because of the disaster. Additionally, active surveillance can be used in non-traditional settings. For example, if a segment of the population was displaced into, say, an evacuation center, regular reporting mechanisms do not have the flexibility to be implemented in these temporary shelters. Active surveillance allows for public health officials to rapidly detect infectious disease outbreaks and to define or measure morbidity of other health problems among the affected population. In addition, morbidity surveillance data can help state and local jurisdictions identify groups at risk for adverse health events and determine priorities of the special needs populations. Next slide. Active surveillance can help target relief efforts. Combined with reports from other federal agencies, state-reported morbidity surveillance data can help identify needs, optimizing the relief response. Likewise, it can monitor the effectiveness of the relief effort. Surveillance data can be used to respond to public concerns and media inquiries. Finally, a review of data from disaster surveillance can be useful in facilitating planning for future disasters. Next slide. For those of you following along with the slides, we are on the Hurricane Katrina slide. Next, I'm going to talk about the public health surveillance efforts during Hurricane Katrina. So what happened to Hurricane Katrina during Hurricane Katrina? Next slide. The aftermath of Hurricane Katrina left almost 1,500 people dead in Louisiana and over 1 million people evacuated. About 800,000 of the evacuated were displaced, and 300,000 took shelter in temporary evacuation centers. Despite the New Orleans mandatory evacuation order, nearly 100,000 people remained in the city and were at risk for health problems, including violence related to civil unrest, health hazards caused by exposure to floodwaters and cleanup activities, and the lack of health care because of infrastructure failure. Next slide. The CDC collaborated with many agencies during their response to Hurricane Katrina. One of the federal agencies include the National Disaster Medical System Disaster Medical Assistance Teams, DMATs. The DMATs, are a group of medical personnel designed to provide emergency medical care during a disaster. Some of you on the phone may be a member of these teams. EMATs were deployed to disaster sites with sufficient supplies and equipment to carry out triage, medical care, and evacuation of disaster victims. During Katrina, about 6,000 DMAT personnel were deployed in 102 teams, with over 165,000 patients treated by DMAT teams. Next slide. Another federal partner was the American Red Cross. The American Red Cross provided shelter, food, health, and mental services during the Katrina response, and over 200,000 volunteers staffed 1,200 evacuation centers in 30 states. Health and Human Services, which includes us at the CDC, provided many teams, including medical services and epidemiology and surveillance field teams. The majority of the team members were public health service officers, CDC epidemic intelligence officers, and other CDC staff. Next slide. After landfall of Katrina, CDC, in partnership with other federal, state, and local agencies, conducted multiple public health activities, including public health surveillance. CDC created surveillance teams in 8 different states, including Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Arkansas, and Virginia. We also had ongoing surveillance in 12 states. Data sources for the surveillance systems were from healthcare facilities, including hospitals, emergency departments, clinics, disaster medical assistance teams, and military treatment units. Data also came from evacuation centers. Partners in these surveillance activities were local and state health departments, American Red Cross, DMAT, and U.S. Public Health Service. Next slide. Sentinel, or enhanced surveillance in New Orleans, was implemented because of the infrastructure loss to the Louisiana Health Department, concern for outbreaks, and the immense political pressure. Surveillance was enhanced to capture all patients that access care in any open New Orleans healthcare facility. Data were collected on each patient using a one-page form. The morbidity surveillance form included categories for 30 illness disease syndromes, 4 mental health conditions, 15 trauma injury conditions with detailed etiology, including body part affected and nature of injury. In addition, medication refill, severity, and disposition were recorded. I'm now going to describe the surveillance that was conducted at healthcare facilities in New Orleans. Forms of each clinical encounter were collected at the healthcare facilities every 24 hours. The forms were either completed by the healthcare facilities or they were completed by CDC staff at the healthcare facilities through a record review process. Data collection was found to be very labor-intensive because of the numerous locations where medical treatment was provided, which included 8 hospitals, 6 DMATs, 5 clinics, and 10 military facilities. Each record has to be transferred from the paper form into an electronic database. Daily incidents of the syndromes were reported to the Louisiana Department of Health and CDC. After 6 weeks, the paper-based system was transitioned to an automated syndromic surveillance system. Next slide. Results. Over 25,000 case report forms were entered into the system. As you can see from this table, chronic disease and medication refill were the most common reported categories in healthcare facilities in New Orleans. Next slide. Now I'll speak about the other surveillance system which CDC established and maintained during Katrina response among Katrina evacuees in Louisiana. There were nearly 500 evacuation centers established in Louisiana. The number and size of these evacuation centers fluctuated, and the healthcare services provided in these centers varied. The form used for this surveillance system was different than the one used in the healthcare facilities. It aggregated the number of cases seen in an evacuation center, rather than report each case individually as the form used in the healthcare facility did. The surveillance form recorded the number of patient encounters during a 24-hour period at an individual evacuation center. The number of patient encounters for selected signs and syndrome categories included 9 illness disease syndromes, 3 mental health conditions, and 5 trauma injury conditions. In addition, medical nursing staff, medical supplies, and medication needs were reported on the evacuation center surveillance form. Incidences of syndromes were monitored daily, and data were analyzed using the statistical software EARS, the early aberration reporting system. Next slide. The surveillance team received nearly 3,000 aggregate surveillance forms, reporting on approximately 40,000 patient encounters during its 49 days of operation. As you can see from the table, the majority of visits were acute care and infectious diseases, with influenza-like illness and rash being the most commonly reported communicable disease syndromes. No significant outbreaks were detected. On average, 33% of the evacuation center population was under surveillance each day. Next slide. CDC also collected data from other Katrina evacuee surveillance systems. Surveillance systems in Arkansas, Mississippi, and Texas regularly reported data to CDC. Data sources from these systems included both healthcare facilities and evacuation centers. The number of healthcare facilities and evacuation centers reporting to these systems fluctuated. In addition, the data reported varied. For example, some states reported three distinct types of gastrointestinal illness, such as diarrhea, cramps, and vomiting, whereas others aggregated all GI-related symptoms and collectively reported them as GI illness. Morbidity rates cannot be calculated because not all healthcare facilities reported the total number of patient visits, and not all reporting evacuation centers provided facility population data. Next slide. Given these surveillance activities, what were the Katrina data interpretation challenges at the federal level? The challenge was integrating daily surveillance data from systems which varied by the number and specificity of conditions under surveillance, which is illustrated by these two graphs. The top graph is from the Georgia Evacuation Center, and it reports the rate of diarrhea and vomiting as one syndrome. The graph below is from New Orleans. Here, diarrhea is presented separately from vomiting and is reported as a percentage rather than a rate. Because there are different numerators, diarrhea or vomiting versus diarrhea by itself, as well as different denominators, rate per 1,000 evacuees versus percentage of patient visits, the data cannot be analyzed together. Other challenges included the dissimilar locations of surveillance activities, such as healthcare facilities versus evacuation centers. Furthermore, the Katrina population under surveillance varied tremendously as the evacuation centers opened and closed. Finally, the variation and modification of forms used for data collection was widespread, even for the system in New Orleans. These challenges underscore the importance of standardized surveillance that supports a collaborative and integrated approach to monitoring and reporting health status of affected populations. Lessons learned. We learned a lot during Katrina. What were some of these lessons learned? First, surveillance provided valuable information. It let us know that there were no significant outbreaks. It helped us to address the media and diffuse rumors, and we were able to measure the burden of chronic conditions. However, there was no standardized method of collection, which meant that we had a lack of common data and information. We also did not have standardized denominators because each entity was collecting their data differently. Next slide. So what are some of the things that need to happen prior to the next disaster? Prior to the next disaster event, we need to consider the following. We need to address the fact that surveillance and data collection is time intensive. We need to determine how to manage the need for different reports from various entities and consider how they will use the data we collect. And it is important that we remember we are a partner with the local, state, and federal organizations and need to include them in our planning for future disasters. Next slide. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca Noe to discuss CDC's Disaster Surveillance Workgroup, which was a direct result of after-action meetings and evaluation efforts following the last major disaster.
Thanks, Amy. So the next slide. So why was the CDC Disaster Surveillance Workgroup established? Well, the surveillance approaches taken during Hurricane Katrina that Amy presented really varied in regards to the data sources available, what data elements these sources or facilities could or would collect. In addition, there was great variability in the data collection methods. Some systems, such as in New Orleans, sent personnel to the facilities to collect the data, whereas in the evacuation center systems, forms were sent by fax to a command post. The lack of uniformity among these two critical steps in surveillance, the data elements available, data collection, directly impacted the ability of state public health and CDC to interpret the data in an effective and efficient manner. The overarching lesson was the need for standardization in and among these aspects of surveillance. So the Disaster Surveillance Workgroup was established to assist in the development of these standardized guidelines and tools for morbidity disaster surveillance. Next slide. Well, the standardized surveillance are critical because CDC, in collaboration with our state and local partners, we consolidate and interpret morbidity data from the disaster zone to target response deployments, also to assist in prevention and control of outbreaks, and which provides a reassurance to the affected populations. Additionally, surveillance data, if standardized, allows for each level of the public health system, local, state, and federal, to accurately monitor the effectiveness of their relief activities. The next slide with the disaster surveillance goals. The goals of the Disaster Surveillance Work Group are to provide technical resources to partners, especially to identify those critical post-hurricane health outcomes, the standardized post-disaster surveillance tools, and to help facilitate data management methodology and rapid processing and reporting of surveillance information. Secondly, we would like to distribute disaster surveillance workgroup tools to help with the increasing the likelihood that multi-setting, multi-jurisdictional information is comparable. And finally, the disaster surveillance workgroup, we have evaluated our tools and our methods and are revising the guidelines to which will improve disaster surveillance efforts and therefore improve situational awareness and response. So on the next slide, in the inception of the disaster surveillance workgroup, our workgroup began after Katrina. Several of the CDC team leads in New Orleans from the National Center for Environmental Health and the National Center for Infectious Disease facilitated the establishment of this work group, which included several across CDC centers subject matter experts from injury, both unintentional and violent and mental health subject matter experts, people from NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, and in the chronic disease division and center. And this included members from a chronic disease work group, disaster work group, and also people involved in reproductive health. We also reached out to national partners involved in disaster response, and this included the National Disaster Medical Services, the American Red Cross, and also to our state collaborators in the Gulf and Atlantic Coast. And these would be state epidemiologists, CDC senior management officials, and also our career epidemiology field officers and BT coordinators. Next slide. So our early work began really with a review and an evaluation of the previous disaster surveillance efforts, looking at the data collection methods and materials, and especially those used during Hurricane Katrina and Rita. The first activity focused on determining those critical elements that needed to be captured during a disaster. And this was facilitated by the Disaster Surveillance Workgroup revising with other members in the workgroup the morbidity forms that were actually used in the field in Katrina. The process was very labor-intensive, and we employed a cross-center after-action meetings. We also did bi-monthly Disaster Surveillance Workgroup meetings for about 6 months, and along with individual homework between meetings, which was completed by the different individual members, such as from injury, from chronic, from NIOSH, kind of looking at their critical elements that they wanted to capture on a one-page form. So what have we done so far? Well, since January 2006, the individual and aggregate morbidity forms were revised through inputs of this disaster surveillance workgroup members in the different subject areas and also with some feedback from the Southeast states. The revisions and agreement on critical data elements allows for the standardization of these forms. During the same time period, Disaster Surveillance Workgroup reached out to American Red Cross and assisted in the revision of their shelter morbidity form. which many of the data elements on that form is very comparable to the disaster surveillance form. We also reached out to the NDMS to strengthen collaborations and also assist them with their new electronic medical record. And then the Disaster Surveillance Work Group was awarded internal funding from CDC to continue our activities. Over the next few slides, I'm going to briefly introduce the revised individual and aggregate morbidity surveillance forms that can be used during a natural disaster response, and in particular, I'll share the data elements that make up the individual form. So the next slide, titled CDC Revised Individual Surveillance Form. So this form should be used to collect patient-level data on infectious and non-infectious conditions in the clinical care setting. And the goal is to collect data on every patient that requires but this does require that the facilities have adequate staff and that this level of detailed in the data is needed for public health decision making. On the next slide is our other form, which is the aggregate surveillance form. And this form should be used to collect facility level data. And mainly this focuses on infectious conditions in temporary shelters such as an evacuation center. The reason this is aggregate is typically resources are strained and therefore overall counts of patients seen can be reported. And now on the next slide, I'm just going to give some general instructions and some guidelines on how these forms should be completed. We envision these forms would be completed in triage or in the emergency department. The data collectors typically would be a health professional, preferably an MD, an RN, or a medical student. The data can be gathered from a review of the patient record or during the interview or evaluation of the patient. We suggest that you check off all the variables that apply because there's no hierarchy of syndromes, which allows flexibility in the analysis of the data. The next couple of slides, I'm just going to walk you through the individual clinical care form, just for you just to get a sense of the information that we're trying to capture and see sort of the critical data elements. So this first slide is just kind of looking at the demographic information. And as you can see on the right-hand lower corner, this is a new data element is asking if the person is pregnant or not. And the next slide is talking about two different data elements, injury data elements and acute illness data elements. And if you see on the injury data elements, we really try to focus on injury mechanisms only. And the reason for this was that if somebody falls and it results in a fracture or a bruise, which is the nature of an injury, your public health injury prevention intervention or message would not change. And the form does try to capture specificity of certain disaster variables which would require immediate public health response. And an example of this would be CO exposure variable. In here, we differentiate between CO exposure from a generator and other source so as to target your public health messages. The acute illness data variables includes those typical syndromes or conditions that you would see during a disaster, such as rashes, GI illness, meningitis, encephalitis, and just focusing on those important diseases that you'd want to do immediate public health action. On the next slide that has three boxes, this is just showing the variables of chronic disease, mental health, and OBGYN conditions that our form captures. We really struggle with trying to limit ourselves to collect only that information which would be considered critical during a disaster to make immediate public health interventions. So each of the different centers at CDC, with some feedback from the state, was able to kind of come up with these core data elements. And lastly, on the bottom of our form, we collect two variables. One is the work-related injury, or work-related injuries or illnesses, which was found to be a prevalent issue in New Orleans. And this was a great interest among people at NIOSH, the National Institutes of Occupational Health and Safety here at CDC. And finally, we do collect the disposition, which we'd use as a proxy of severity. So those who died or admitted would be considered more severe illness or injuries. The next slide. Oh, sorry. I'm having technical difficulties. Okay. So the next slide that says disaster surveillance activities, summer 2007. This past summer, we've actually accomplished a lot. The first event that occurred is we had the National Disaster Medical Service visit CDC and demonstrate their new electronic medical record. And in collaboration with several of the disaster surveillance workgroup members, they included in the EMR chief complaints that are comparable to the disaster surveillance work groups variables on the individual form, so allowing some comparability. So they'll be collecting in their chief complaint box the syndromes that are on our individual form. And we also were able to pilot test our tools, our form, and I'll speak to this in the next slide, and our information technology, our advanced technology data collection tools, in collaboration with the Georgia Department of Public Health and also the CIFO program at CDC. So the next slide talks a little bit, gives some specifics on the pilot test that happened in July, August 2007. And we completed this in late August, and the results are to assist us in validating and evaluating the surveillance form, as well as comparing the data collection advanced technologies that we employed in the field. So our goals were to determine the sensitivity and the specificity of the clinical syndromes and outcome variables through comparing what was captured on our form to a ER discharge record. We assessed the effectiveness of advanced technologies through comparing the data collection modalities such as a paper form that we filled out the paper form also with a PDA, and then also looking at that PDA data collection tool against a scannable methodology, looking at the timeliness and the accuracy and the usability of these different modalities. The results of this pilot really help us guide our revisions to the tools, and we are in the final stages of completing this analysis and are readapting our tools accordingly. In 2008, the Disaster Surveillance Workgroup will be presenting these results to our partners, especially the Southeast states with NDMS and also with the Medical Reserve Corps. So in summary, if a hurricane hit tomorrow, what would CDC need from clinical responders? Well, we hope this talk provided you some insight that clinical data is public health data, and that this data that you collect during a response is very important to public health. And when you're in your field hospital or clinic, and you see the patients, recognizing that a standard form, whether that be the state's form, the Disaster Surveillance Workgroup form, American Red Cross, or NDMS, this provides valuable public health information and should be completed. Also, in these austere conditions, clinicians need to know how are they to report unusual clusters or any communicable disease to the public health authorities. And lastly, we really are interested in getting clinicians' feedback on these surveillance efforts. We realize that your time is valuable and you're a valuable partner. And to collect this information, we don't want to overburden with you with forms or requests. And therefore, your feedback in trying to streamline this process is invaluable. And our future activities is really focusing on the Disaster Surveillance Workgroup, how we can facilitate the approaches to surveillance. We realize that not one size fits all. Different states have different tools, have different ways they want things reported. But we envision that our tools can help and assist and guide this goal to improve a methodology approach to disaster surveillance. And surveillance efforts really must be tailored to answer these questions that are listed on the slide. You know, what are the questions that decision makers need to answer during this event? How large is the affected population? What resources are available in the jurisdiction? And what information sources are available? And what time frame exists for providing results? And our goal for this next year in 2008, along with supplying our partners our information from our pilot is really incorporating wider state involvement and getting feedback how our tools can be how things that we have on our tools that need to be adapted and how states can kind of assist us with that, as well as there may be things that we've been doing that can assist certain states that haven't moved disaster surveillance guidelines as far as they'd like. And I'd like to, next slide, and I'd like to thank you very much for your attention and this opportunity to share with you a little bit what we've been doing here at CDC. And this slide has two web links where our forms are. We also have data collection tools that are available in request, and that is in an EpiInfo and scannable, so we have the form adapted to that. And on the next slide is our contact information. You can go to this. We have a fact sheet, and we also have any questions that you can want to, any questions that we can't answer in the next few moments. Thank you very much. We can now open up the line for questions.
Thank you very much. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please. Our first question comes from Darren Hutchins. Your line is open.
Yes. I wondered if the group had any plans to go beyond these kinds of forms and the data collection you've been talking about and maybe get into resource typing like the state of Florida or North Carolina have been doing there to tell us what kind of people we need to have in place in public health to deal with all this data coming in and assist the clinicians in collecting it. But I'd rather have them taking care of patients than filling out data forms.
Hi, this is Rebecca. That is a great question. Just to restate your question, your question is if we're going to help with giving guidelines about then the creating kind of like with a response team how. How would we envision that at CDC, where we'd say you would need a team lead with this many epidemiologists go out in the field with this many data clusters. Is that your question?
Yes. And some basic kind of training that we would need to have for the people who are going to go out and these PDAs or whatnot that they need to use. We're trying to work on resource typing for strike teams and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, and I think that we have done a little bit of that with Health and Human Services. They have response teams, and we have done some training with the form on a PDA. But I think that that's definitely an area that we would like to go in the direction we'd go into. But I think one of the things we learned from the pilot, and again, where this is kind of preliminary data, is that definitely hard to say what resources you need, where when you get to the field, they're sometimes different. Like for example, we went to one hospital to collect data, and once you got there, you realized there were 4 entry points for patients to come in. We didn't have enough PDAs at the field, so I think there's definitely an area to develop some guidelines, maybe with like strike teams. But again, the question of a new field, sometimes there's changes that need to be done on the fly.
Sure.
Thank you for your question.
Thank you. Bob Casper, your line is open.
Hello. Is there a reason why CDC has not just come out and made one clinical care form for everybody to use so this can all be scanned into one report for any other, reason for helping for surveillance?
Good question. In an ideal world, that's what we would have. But we have a lot of partners, and there's a lot of states and different localities involved, and it's hard to get everyone to agree to one form, which is why we'd rather standardize variables that are going to go on the form so that individuals can make slight changes if they wanted to. But we are trying to create a package here at CDC where we have a form, and we have it already built in a database, and it's in a PDA, and it's scannable. And you can use that if you'd like. And if you don't want to use that, you know, hopefully you take at least our vocabulary and use it so that we then can collect all the data. But we definitely agree with you, and we wish that everyone would use this one standard form, but we can't even get the individual centers at CDC to agree on one form, so I don't think we could get all 50 states to agree to one form.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dr. Kenteray. Your line is open.
Yes, hello. Is it possible to have all of this as electronic form?
This is Rebecca. Yeah, we tried that with our pilot to have the form on a rapid data collector as well as in EpiInfo, and it is available. You could if you upload the form. The question is, you always need to have that backup of a paper form. So if you're in a really austere environment where there is no electricity, you'll need to be able to collect that information. But that is the goal. It's not as easy as it seems. It would seem like it'd be easy. The fact is, if you have a form and you want to change a question, you'll have to change on every electronic format or platform that you have it on. But that is, as Amy just mentioned, we do have the form on a PDA, this rapid data collector at CDC, as well as EpiInfo. So it's already ready to be deployed if people want to use it. So it's available, but again, it's with some caveats.
Also, yesterday when I tried to access the forms, they were very difficult to access.
Those links?
Yes.
Okay, I apologize. We'll check into that. If you can leave your name and email address that was on here, send it to the question, we can get you those forms.
I will send it to Henning for help.
Excuse me?
I will send it to E-H-E-H-I-N-G for help regarding the problems.
Okay.
Very difficult to access.
If you could send it to the COCA email,
the COCA email is COCA, C-O-C-A, at cdc.gov.
Okay, I'll do that. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I apologize to anybody that tried to do that. We're in the process of moving those forms. They're on an emergency website, and we're trying to bring it over to a disaster surveillance website, so I apologize for that.
Thank you. Alisa West, your line is open.
Hi, yes, my questions, actually several of them have already been answered, but as far as I'm looking at the aggregate surveillance form that is to be used mostly for temporary shelters and evacuation centers, and my question is, how do those centers find out about the forms, and back to the training question, how are they trained on how to use forms?
This is Rebecca again. I mean, really the way we envision the aggregate form is that it's available, and it is with states. I mean, CDC has to be invited to assist. And typically, because we have had, we want to go out this coming year to really promote what we've created, we hope that, you know, working with state epidemiologists, also with, we have the CIFO, which is a CDC program, there are people in the state, getting the word out, but we can't really force, as we mentioned before, we can't force states to use what we've developed. We would just hope that if a state didn't have any forms, and they typically do this, they'll request CDC for some assistance to develop some tools or surveillance forms, that we'd have these available and we could send them to them. Again, it's just really more about the state epidemiologist making that decision.
And they can also make the request for us to come in and do some training if they would like.
Right. And we've been talking this year. We've trained the Health and Human Services response team, and as well as we did go to one meeting with the Medical Reserve Corps, because that's a whole area where a lot of you out there that are clinicians may be involved with the Medical Reserve Corps. And if you're pulled to a different state and people want you to kind of collect information on a 20-page form, it might be useful to have people that know about the form to say, hey, have you guys thought of, CDC has a really short form that we can collect information. But it's really kind of in beginning stages of, you know, people knowing about what we're doing.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Derek Surianka, your line is open.
Hi, it's Derek Surianka. Two answers and one question. First, for the resource typing, the National Incident Management System Integration Center has been working on resource typing for public health, and they should be having answers out shortly on that. The second question that was the last person just asked was, you know, how do you get the evacuation centers trained up? And in Louisiana, we relied a lot on just-in-time training because we had such a huge turnover in the evacuation center staff. And then the question, Rebecca, have you guys looked at what triggers you would use to implement the individual level data collection system, vice the aggregate system?
No, we haven't. I think that most of us feel that probably the aggregate is what people are going to use, and I think that the interest of you know, determining that individual form is because that's what we did in Katrina, as you know, that you were down in New Orleans. And I think that people realize that there may be that potential. But again, your point is taken. What is the trigger that you either need to do individual data or aggregate? I don't think most people feel that in an evacuation center that they would do individual. You know, I think at this point most people feel they would use that aggregate form.
Okay, Doug.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, talk to you later.
Bye.
Thank you. Kurt Emery, your line is open.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up with the question that you've developed some of these rapid data collection, EpiInfo, Scannable. Are they all available out at the website so we could download the database in whatever stage it's at? Or is it just the two forms?
You would have to make a request to us, and you can do that. The Scannable is the exact form that you see, but you would have to have scanning software, and then you'd have to, whatever software you have to redo the form for your software. You can make a request. We did the PDA one on Rapid Data Collector, which is a CDC software that is free and available to anyone. You just have to make a request to that. If you send an email to COCA, we could get that request put in for you.
Okay, so you'll send us the EpiInfo database set for both these two forms?
Yeah, we can do that. That's not a problem.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. John, your line is open.
Yeah, on slide 39 on the individual clinical care form, I didn't see a signature block for the healthcare provider or nurse to fill out. And also, will the person that signs this form responsible during compensation claims for those workers and or volunteers?
Hi, this is Rebecca. We actually, and that form, that's a great point, because down in Katrina, the form had your signature at the top just to kind of a quick, you know, actually your initials so they could find you down. But that's a great point if people are coming and going in Medical Reserve Corps teams or DMAT teams. I think the question about you know, the issue of insurance and malpractice. I mean, CDC is just assisting with developing forms to collect data for local and state health departments. We're not advocating that CDC would be creating their own, let's say, DMAT teams and having, you know, clinicians come in and fill out forms for them. This is just a tool for states to use. Was that your question?
Well, I see it. If you sign a form and they're saying that the condition occurs as a result of work involving hurricane response or restoration efforts, that this form can be used as a claims
Yeah. One of the things that we've typically, and I mean, that's an excellent point, because right now what this form is really extracting data that's in a medical record or from the patient. But I definitely think that's a great point. And
there is no there's no identifying information on the form, so it would be very difficult for someone to find their own form that was filled out for them and to use that form for any kind of claim, because we have no identifying information. If you do see a spot that says medical record number, we typically that's just an ID number. It's not necessarily a someone's medical record number, but like for the last pilot, we put zip code in there. And in other ones, we just start numbering them sequentially.
Yeah, that's a great point, because the patient's name would not be on that form.
Thank you. Mary Lee, your line is open.
Thank you. I'm a volunteer nurse with the American Red Cross, and I'm very familiar with these forms. Since May of 06, we've been using a similar form in our shelters. So it does follow, you know, your format of your morbidity report. So, and I see now you're making adjustments. So for me, it's coming like full circle. I'm having, you know, the two ends meet. So I'm glad to see that we are up to speed with CDC. Thank you.
Well, good. And thank you for that comment. You'll definitely recognize the format, definitely mimic the American Red Cross. We started off with the American Red Cross form and then made changes from there.
Right.
Right. So. We appreciate your collaboration.
Thank you. At this time, I'm showing nothing further.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we want to thank our lovely presenters again for presenting this information to our listeners, and I want to thank our participants for joining us today. So in case you didn't get a chance to ask your question or think of one later, please send an email to COCA. That's COCA@CDC.gov, COCA@CDC.gov. The recording of this call and the transcript will be posted to the COCA website as they come to us, so be looking for those. You will actually have a year to complete the evaluation in order to obtain continuing education credits. So for the first month, use the code of EC1265, and after that first month, beginning January 18th, 2008, the code will be WD1265. And all continuing education credits for COCA conference calls are issued online through the CDC Training and Continuing Education online system at www.2a.cdc.gov/TCEonline/. And all that information is on our website as well. So we thank you again and have a good day.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.